listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
And welcome to episode 272 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
Bit of a chill episode this time, considering what the last episode was like. We're going to be talking about...
There is some Netflix later on, so it is Netflix.
I mean, we had quite a response to last week's...
The last episode. Let's tell people what we've got coming up this episode. This episode, we're going to be talking about our Halloween plans and a general catch-up on what we've all been up to. As for what happened in the last episode, we got some traffic from the Fanables. The Hannibal fandom.
Fanables sounds like they're collectibles or something.
Yeah, well, there are some creators in it, and that it'd be cool to have little like miniature collectibles of them.
That would be pretty cool, almost like pops or something.
Yeah, I mean, how
anatomically correct would these collectibles be?
It would depend on the individual creator.
Whether they were up for it.
Yeah, but I want to point out that there was a pop made of Brian Fuller. For one of the San Diego Comic Cons back in the day.
Okay.
So at least one of the actual creators has had a pop made of them. He's in like an orange suit or something.
I'm conflicted with that because you know my opinion of of those.
Yeah. That's what I think. I've got an office full of them. Mostly Supernatural ones, though.
Yes, although you have got some Hannibal ones as well.
Well, yeah, I've got all the Hannibal ones, yeah. Bar the two that got released in San Diego Comic Con, which are incredibly rare. And you get people selling bootleg versions.
I mean, bearing in mind that, I mean, you at one point was just like, look, I'm just going to collect the Supernatural ones. That's it. I don't want to. There's absolutely thousands of different, you know, ones for all sorts of different franchises. And now you've got all the Hannibal ones as well. Well, as many as you can get your hands on.
Well, there's six and I have four.
As many as you can get your grubby little hands on.
I mean, if anyone wants to sell at a reasonable price, the two that I don't have. But otherwise, I don't think I've even seen any of them being sold for an unreasonable price because they're so rare.
See, there are some that keep popping up in B&M. I don't think specifically the Hannibal ones, but I will keep an eye out, and I may even set fire to the shelf.
It's unlikely on account of the fact that they are some of the rarest ones.
You do generally tend to go for the rare pops in the end, don't you? Because, I mean, you're a fan of other stuff as well. But, yeah, I mean, because you can go into... Well, I know you used to be able to go into virtually any shop, and they used to be, like, you know, wall full of, you know, the... with like different, you know, ones. For,
yeah, but it's usually like the really
like superhero ones, well, or yeah, video game ones, and Harry Potter ones.
I don't bother collecting the big mainstream ones. No. But that's fine. Make some cool.
Yeah, I mean, you could.
The ones you collect, you probably never heard of them.
I'll tell you what. There is one Hannibal pop I refuse to get, and that's the Hannibal Lecter from the films Hannibal.
You have a bee in your bonnet about that, a little bit. Not the pop, obviously. The fact that Hannibal from Silence of the Lambs is just.
I know it's an award-winning film, Silence of the Lambs, but when you compare Anthony Hopkins' performance of Hannibal to what Mads Mikkelsen achieved, Mads is like years fucking ahead.
I've just realised that means that both Hannibals have been in the MCU as well.
Yes, though one was decidedly a bad guy versus the other.
Hang on, run that by me again. My brain just fizzed.
So Anthony Hopkins, is it Sir? Anthony Hopkins? Yeah, Anthony Hopkins. He was Odin.
Yep.
and Mads Mikkelsen was Doctor Strange. He was like,
you see, for a short moment there, I thought you actually meant as Hannibal. I'm just going, the fuck have I missed? What? Is this like the alien queen being a Disney princess now? You know, that kind of thing.
Oh, please.
I mean, whose villain would he be? If he was actually, you know, in the MCU? Would it be like Iron Man's or something?
No, he's too psychological for that.
Maybe Captain America's?
No.
That's America's ass.
I mean, to be fair, like,
and it was tasty.
Hannibal on the
TV. That's America's rump.
Hannibal on the TV series has, there's certain screenshots where you kind of get of like Will Graham and Hannibal Lecter, and it does look like Hannibal is looking and checking out Will's butt on the couch, just where his eye line is when.
And that'll be why those screenshots exist.
Yeah. But.
I know what fandoms are like.
But I don't think. I would hate for Hannibal to be anywhere near anything Super Disney. I was slightly alarmed by the fact that Hannibal suddenly appeared on Hulu in the US in the past week, while still being on Netflix. And I was like, oh.
But can you imagine Will Graham as a Disney princess?
You know what? A lot of the fandom would happily imagine Will Graham as a Disney princess. That's because of how they decide to depict him in relationships.
Yeah.
Is he a little princess?
I have no comment on that. No comment.
That's fair. That's
I want to talk about what people are up to for Halloween, design. Which, oh God, which you're the ones dragging this out. Not me. Not me. Though, at the same time, if you're lucky enough to be in the US or Canada, you can at least watch Hannibal for free on even Netflix or Hulu at the moment, certainly in the US. In the UK, we're still currently screwed on that front.
Yeah.
But anyway, what are people up to for Halloween? Well, Paul and I are kind of on the same thing, so we'll go... We'll go after Retroid. Retroid.
That's what Emily thinks.
Oh, what are you up to for Halloween, Retroid?
Well, when it comes to watching or playing stuff, I'm not sure because we've kind of spoilt one option, which is we decided to we ran out of things to watch, so we ended up watching The Haunting of Bly Manor. And that was rather good. But because there are some people who haven't finished it...
I don't know what you're talking about.
I won't spoil anything. I wasn't planning on it anyway, but...
I've watched one episode, and I have a feeling I've sort of half-spoiled it for myself anyway, on account of the fact that I'm pretty darn sure I've read the Henry James story that it is based on, and I did so on my degree, but I can't remember if it was part of my... American Literature unit or my Gothic and Grotesque unit.
So you may have things stored up there.
Yeah, like the twist.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty present in my head. To be fair, the particular story it's based on is one that's been referenced, I think, a lot in various bits of media over the years as well. So, yeah.
But, so, we watched, Haunting of Bly Manor. It is quite good. It is not what I would, call spooky. It's not grotesque or anything like that either. So, it's a fairly, what I would say, it's a good story, but it's kind of PG.
But the episodes are not rated PG. I think it is, like, the show's, like, a 15-rated series.
Yeah, I mean it's got stuff I suppose that would qualify for 15, age 15 rating, but it's not unsettling. It's more of a, it's an interesting good story, which we both enjoyed, and because of that, and apparently a lot of people had the same idea as well. We finished off Haunting of Bly Manor. And the same people had done The Haunting of Hill House.
Oh, yeah.
And we finished Bly Manor, and there was the Haunting of Hill House, which was released about 2 years ago, already in the, you know, like, top five for the UK. So lots of people had clearly thought, yeah, I'll watch that.
Spooky season.
Yeah. And, yeah, I enjoyed it. I would say, if anything, and it's, you know, it's not spoilery, Bly Manor is from the perspective of the dead. And Hill House is from the perspective of the living. Basically, the gist of Haunting of Hill House is that there were a family who were going around, and they were, you know, renovating houses. So they, you know, bought this house mysteriously cheaply. This nice, stately type house in the US. And they were going to renovate it and then sell it for, you know, massive profit, which is nice. And things under the house don't agree with that. And it happens, about half of it is in flashback, half of it is in, you know, modern day. And the children who have been screwed up by, you know, the legacy of, being there. And they're still in one way or another haunted by it or tied, you know, to the house, get drawn back. And it ends up, you know, back there in the finale. And yeah, it's good. And I did like the bent neck lady in Haunting of Hill House. I thought she was good. I'll say nothing more.
Okay.
Of that, but yeah, it's like, oh, okay.
I would say any record.
And also, you know what? Really, just, you know, it caused a little short circuit in my head.
Okay.
When I realised, first of all, there's several members of the cast who are shared between Bly Manor and, Hill House, playing different characters. So I would say it's like a more classy, less schlock version of American Horror Story in that way.
Hey, don't diss an American Horror Story.
I like American Horror Story, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean, yeah.
It's not subtle.
It's so
put
if
it that way.
So if you've watched those, though, before Halloween, what are you going to do for Halloween?
I'm knackered, but hang on. But you're not distracting me. I'm dragging myself back to this one point, which was I recognised one of the actors. He plays the father in The Haunting of Hill House and an uncle in Bly Manor, and I recognised him. And it's, who is he? So I looked him up on IMDb, and you know that gif of I can't remember, Jason Bourne bloke.
Matt Damon.
That's it, Matt Damon. Growing older within seconds.
Mm-hmm.
I recognised the dad in this series because he played Elliot in E.T.
Wow.
So it's just, oh God. Oh God, I think I need help going to the toilet. Where's my cup of tea? Nurse? Oh shit.
I mean, it reminds me of, what was it, that Final Fantasy one. I'm not sure whether you saw that one.
Well,
it's like,
yeah, Retroid shared it with us.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So, where it's like, you know, what people think Final Fantasy 20 years ago is like versus what it actually was. And it's like Final Fantasy X was 20 years ago. And it's like, the fuck? You're lying.
Yeah, time
you
thief.
Must be lying.
Time thief.
I mean, technically 20 years ago, just about in Japan, but not the rest.
You're trying to justify that.
I'm just trying.
It's all right. It was in Japan.
Yeah.
Not the European edition.
I mean, they're at least, you know, about 8 hours ahead of us. It's fine.
Yeah, they're already in the future.
To be fair, when it came to the delay between releasing it in, you know, PAL land and, you know, from, you know, Japan, they had to have extra time to put in the 17% slowdown and the massive fucking jail bars on it, on the top and bottom of the screen, because they refused to resize it. That takes time and effort, yeah. You know.
I mean, that's fixed in the remasters, isn't it?
I can't remember. Sure.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the smarter things where we're just going to ignore that we hated Europe.
I just always find it funny with Tim, with the Americans, it's only on the re-releases that they finally had access to Dark Aeons, and my experience of playing it was always Dark Aeons and Penance was an issue to be dealt with, if you so please to do so.
I mean, I still remember my surprise when it's like going back into Besed, and it's like, the fuck? The fuck is this?
Did you have Yojimbo at the time, or were you really screwed?
I think the first time that I played it, I think I was screwed.
Oh.
Especially when it's like, oh, you have to go back to Besed in order to get like the second
overdrive thing.
For Battlefor. And it's just like, you kind of go there, and it's like, the fuck is this? How am I meant to do this?
Yeah.
And can we all agree that the one thing that everyone wanted when they played the Final Fantasy games was that they wanted it to be about 17 to 20% slower?
Yes.
And for the animations to take 17 to 20% longer to play through. That you see, thinking about it, they actually loved PAL Land.
Halloween.
Yes.
That's happening.
My plan is like usual, which is to ignore the little fuckers.
I mean, that's normal with outside of pandemic, okay?
Yeah, yeah. My addition for this is to stand, if anyone dares knock on my front door, to stand behind it coughing. It's been 5 days! I can open the door! And if they don't get the hint, I'll just walk away. Because I can't be asked. You're not getting any of my chocolate.
Them, with your slingshot or something. Straight in the face.
Yeah.
I have suggested to several parents that perhaps
a Halloween Scrooge? Just thinking.
I have suggested to several groups that perhaps they should develop sweet catapults or trebuchets for Halloween in order to deliver sweets. Nobody has taken this seriously, which is a darn shame, because we are in the middle of a pandemic and you just can't have people wandering up to front doors trying to get random sweets. I mean, you could put the sweets in a bowl at the end of your drive or something, but where's the real fun in that? I think launching sweets through the air into buckets, eyes, mouths, faces in general, hoods from, you know, like witchy outfits or something, like that truly is what we should all be about this year. Limited damage via sweets.
I mean, you know, there's my other idea, which is to load full size plastic boxes of roses, you know, Cadbury's roses, into t-shirt cannons and fire those at people.
From your front door.
Yeah. Just see how long it takes for the police to arrive.
Mind you, if you had one of those, you know, those really big slingshots.
I was giving her chocolate.
You know those really big slingshots you can get where it's like, you know, like it's got like a massive cup on it and massive rubber bands, and you have to like bodily move yourself with the cradle backwards. Like if you could get one that had like a cradle that was like the right shape and size for like a roses box, plastic one. And then just cut, you know, obviously, you know, aim and fire as needed. You'd probably do some damage.
Is it time to point out I'm not a parent? Or how
just in case people are, you know, worrying about this.
But,
are there any mini retroids?
There's no mini retroids. Is there any games you might play?
I was thinking I could. I've never actually played Silent Hill 4, which is widely regarded as the weakest.
Is that the room?
Yep.
Yeah.
I gave up on that.
I love the soundtrack. I've got the soundtrack. I've listened to the soundtrack a lot, but yeah. I watched Mrs. Retroid play it and just thought, yeah, nah. Listen to the soundtrack again. Resident Evil 7? That's on Game Pass. And the one where you're trapped in the house.
Yeah, I never managed to get through the demo of that, which is one of the reasons why I've never picked it up so far.
Oh, that's a reason you should have an Exponent Game Pass, because I hadn't bothered with the last few.
There Resident is no Evil. Reason to bother with 6. 6 doesn't exist. It will never exist. It shouldn't exist.
What's this 6? I don't understand.
Exactly. Yeah. It is non-existent. It doesn't exist. There is no 6.
It's like a pity they only made... You know, have you heard they're making The Matrix 2? A second Matrix film?
Oh my god,
that should be good.
Did you hear that they made that they only made 2 Dark Knight movies?
Wow.
Mm.
I would have thought they'd have made a third one by now.
Nah. So
you, mind you,
nonsense.
Look at the length of time it took for them to make Terminator 3.
Mm. Yeah.
And then they didn't call it Terminator 3, they called it Dark Fate. So it's just weird. The movie industry, I just don't understand.
I know.
So by the way, tangent. I know, unusual. Seeing as Bond finished filming, was it round about a year ago, I heard?
It's something ridiculous.
Yeah, it's just, why don't they just go and make a new one? In the meantime...
Because they haven't figured out who their new James Bond is, because it's clearly, that's surely one of the problems, is they need to have a new actor or actress.
Unless he gets killed or something.
No, that'd be pretty brave.
I don't know, accidentally slams his head in a microwave right at the end. And they say, oh no, what would he look like after this? Which we need to find out.
What, you mean like some sort of regeneration? Like Doctor?
Yeah. I mean, it's still weird what they do with Bond, isn't it? You know, the whole, oh yeah, we'll just do this again.
I it would be better if they just acknowledged the sort of the more the fan concept, because I don't think it's ever been made official, that it's just an alias that's been played, that is taken on by agents who are in the 007 standing.
That makes
sense. Yeah, but the number of times everyone gets reset, like there's a new money penny.
Hmm. And like it's just M as well. Like M crossed over from the original, it's not even the original, but
from the Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah. Onto the Daniel Craig. And it's just like, wait, is this meant to be a continuation?
Obviously, we know why Q didn't continue over, unfortunately.
Yeah.
He's too busy with those gadgets.
But,
in an alternate universe, in a happier alternate universe.
Yeah. So, you might have a go at Resident Evil 7 here. Mm.
Oh, you're bringing this back?
Yeah.
just clawing back, pulling on that rope. Stay away from the light. Stay away from the light of the tangent. Pulling you back through.
I mean, I did recently rewatch Casino Royale, the newer one. The first of obviously the Daniel Craig ones, purely for Mads Mikkelsen's performance as the chief.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, I very much felt for Mads Mikkelsen's character, and I was frustrated on his character's behalf and annoyed. Yeah.
Vividly remember the nuts.
Yes, but
the torture of the nuts.
That's quite the spoiler.
Is it? At this point, Casino Royale?
Might be.
Really?
Yeah.
If anybody's interested, then they probably would have seen it by now.
Hopefully.
Fingers crossed.
Lots of nuts.
If not, poor nuts. Nuts. Ow.
Nuts, yeah.
Ow nuts.
Nuts to the nuts.
Nuts to the nuts?
Yeah.
Nuts to the nuts, because there's a knot on the rope. Was
so
it?
Whip it
was
real
it
good.
Rope, it... Whip it just like you should.
So...
Emily looks so disappointed. For anybody that can't see Emily, which is like everybody apart from me, Emily looks so disappointed. So let down, and
but not
it is
surprised.
Glorious.
Far from surprised, just
just disappointed.
Just disappointed.
Meanwhile, we have Halloween plans.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
We're talking about Halloween, aren't we? I forgot
that. Again, avoiding trick or treaters. Sorry, kids, but just no this year. Just nope. Apart from it,
delightful little disease vectors.
Regardless of COVID, I only had my flu jab like about 2 weeks ago, and it takes 3 weeks for you to gain immunity from your flu jab. So, yeah, avoiding children. However, so long as the legal situation doesn't suddenly change in the next few days. We will have the company of my two younger brothers, and we will be doing a film.
And by two younger brothers, you're talking about one that is, what, 20?
One in their 20s and one in their mid-teens, yes.
Okay, so, you know, kind of explaining that they're younger.
Yeah.
And, you know,
but we're going to have a film. But we're going to have a film marathon, but because the youngest can't watch 18s yet, if we let him watch 18s, my mum will perhaps... deny us Christmas cake and stuff like that, so that's not gonna happen.
I mean, to be honest, there's a lot of 18 films which are not particularly scary, and they're kind of, you know, 18 just because they've got like a tick box with like blood or, you know,
sex.
My favorite example of stupid age ratings that you know I used with you know people way back now were two videotapes I had in my own collection. One was the original Star Wars, which is rated universal, even though someone gets their arm chopped off and you see the severed arm with blood. And a comedy tour video, which was David Baddiel and Rob Newman.
Oh, God.
Which was just them doing routines, you know, on stage. And because they said naughty words, that was rated 18. So, dismemberment with sci-fi sword or bad words.
Well, I mean, the horror example of that, of which a 15 rated film that should not be rated a 15, it should be an 18, is the original Silent Hill film, which we have talked about at length on this podcast over the years. But that is one 15-rated horror film we will not be having on the podcast because it really should be a goddamn 18. And I have no idea...
That's with the being burned alive witch.
Well, it's not just that. There was the barbed wire rape.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
and
yeah.
The literal
fun for all the family.
And the literal skin. But apparently that's a 15. Apparently, according to the BBFC.
I mean,
the fuck they're
on. They must have been nodding off while watching Girls from Glass.
Something like
No, that's all right, that's all right.
We, as you all know, I'm on record as being a big fan of the BBFC. And I think they do a good job.
However, because of this limitation, that means that we can't show such horror classics as I would normally perhaps do, like Night of the Living Dead or Dawn of the Dead, because those are 18s. But it means that we are looking at currently the original Final Destination, Tremors, which is, I think, technically 12, but it might be a 15. I haven't looked at the DVD cases recently. All I know is it's under an 18, which means it's fine. Potentially Tucker and Dale versus Evil, though unsure about that, partly because it is technically a take on genres,
Yeah, and if you don't, if you're not already familiar with the genres, then yeah, you're kind of going to miss half the point.
Mm. We're looking at The Frighteners, though, which is the Michael J. Fox film, which was it just directed by Peter Jackson, or was it written by him as well? I can never remember.
Not sure.
The Fright Night remake, which may give you pause, but actually it is really good, and the original is unfortunately an 18. The sequel, I don't know if that's still hard to get hold of, but Fright Night 2 was, but the last time I looked, really tricky to get hold of on disc.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it's going to be any.
Yeah.
Although saying that, streaming services.
Weird.
But
the remake is really good. Then that's got David Tennant and a couple of other familiar faces in it. And then we will potentially be watching World War Z, because it is surprisingly a 15, and we think they'll be able to cope with it.
And it's not a bad film, actually.
Yeah, it has. I've warmed to it over the years. Originally, I was pretty pissed at it, but I've actually come to like it.
Oh wait, that's the original Fright Night.
Yeah,
that's the original Fright Night.
There's a Fright Night.
Fright Night.
And there's a remake 2 available, but not the original 2.
I could suggest Ghostbusters, or is that oversaturation?
I think it's more just because it's younger. We were trying to aim for stuff that he wouldn't have watched before. Like, my other brother's definitely seen some of these.
There's that one, which is an all-region Blu-ray import.
That is ridiculous. But... so it hasn't actually had a proper release over here. I mean, we could, but I think we've got a DVD of the original. It's like, if we were going to upgrade to Blu-ray, it'd be like...
it's just daft, isn't it? I would like to give you money. Hello, Mr. Film Company. I would like to give you money. Here's the money. Why don't you want my... Why are you walking away?
So, yeah, so watching... watching those films are like our main Halloween films. Sort of not Halloween films. Our Halloween plans.
Oh, did say World War Z.
Yeah, said World War Z.
Okay, sorry.
Oh, and I, thanks to working away in the shed, I have watched, some more, classic films. And as an example, I saw Ghostbusters 2 recently, although that was thanks to Amazon Prime. And yeah, my opinion of Ghostbusters 2 has not mellowed or improved.
What?
I think I would probably cause art. You might have seen those trilogy ratings. That some people have posted. I would have Ghostbusters the original as very high, Ghostbusters 2 as quite low, and the sort of reboot, whatever you want to call it,
the 2016 film.
The 2016 film would be between the original Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2.
A lot of people would find that very controversial.
Yeah. Whereas I went with someone who, because he treated me, because, we're childhood friends, and he's got weird politics. But that's because
like code for something.
He's got... let's just say he doesn't understand a lot, not from from his own fault, but yeah, he's just not that bright when it comes to politics and reading things which are clear dog whistles. And he really liked the original Ghostbusters, and he's tried sharing right wing things with me, just because he doesn't understand the context. And then when I've explained it to him, he's like, but yeah, we went to see the 2016 Ghostbusters, and he enjoyed it. So to anyone who doesn't like it, simply because it's got a different cast, someone who I expected really not to like it. And he walked out the cinema and said, "Yeah, I see another one of those."
Fair.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually quite enjoyed it.
Oh, it's not perfect. It's got issues. There's the stuff I would edit or trim, but generally, I just think it's a much better film than Ghostbusters 2 is. So there you go. Suck it.
I used to like Ghostbusters 2 when I was a kid, but there again, kids notoriously have no taste, and I haven't watched it recently, so...
Isn't that the film that got stolen when you guys went on holiday the one time when you were a kid?
It's very possible.
I'm pretty sure you said that somebody broke into your house and stole your VHS machine, and it happened that Ghostbusters 2 was in the machine when it was stolen.
It was me. I was doing you a favour.
I think that must have been my mum that said that. I presume that's the case, but I must have been really young at that point.
No, you told me.
Or you just kept rewatching it, and it'd say, "Oh yeah, unfortunately, it got stolen. Don't look in the bin." it's like the many, many drum kits or portable keyboards that that grannies have bought. Is it mysterious? Oh, you got stolen. Anyway,
so. Yeah, we've got that list of films. I have to admit, I am slightly tempted by the existence of... Oh, what was it, that game Bandai Namco's publishing this week? What's it called? Is it Little Hope? By Dark Pictures?
See, I am not familiar with this at all.
The Dark Pictures, Little Hope. It's an action-adventure game with, like, multiple potential endings and stuff. Like, sort of choose how things unravel. I'm tempted by it on account of some very good targeted Twitter trailer ads that were sent my way.
Pardon me?
And it looks quite interesting, but we'll see. The main thing is actually just trying to do the movie marathon, really. There are other films. I look forward to both of my brothers being 18 purely because it will open up horror film marathons far better.
It's not just horror films though, because you have like action flicks that are
The Die Hard, well. First two Die Hards are 18s.
It's not just
Robocop.
It's not also just about kind of classic ones. It's also ones that will kind of come out over time as well.
Yeah, but you know what? There aren't as many 18 rated films being released these days on account of the fact that...
Everybody's after, the younger audience.
Yeah, so it's more market value in releasing stuff that's got a lower age value. Really.
I mean, I remember when I was a kid, and, the whole load of videos that were like 18s and above. Well, so 18s.
Mm. Yeah, basically, that was Hollywood. The big action films I wanted to watch, I still like Predator and Total Recall. They were all 18s.
Total Recall, I've only ever known it to be a 15.
Well, I can remember, but I definitely know that Predator was.
There was definitely a load of Barney films that are 18s.
But you know what? Yeah, I mean, despite the fact that you remember it as a 15, I remember being slightly traumatized by the sight of Arnie having his eyes, kind of bulge out of his head.
Oh, yeah.
I can see how that would work.
Mm. I mean, when I was a kid, at least.
Yeah. But no,
and also the lady with three breasts. That also stuck in my mind as a kid as well.
If you aren't having...
Really? Did it?
I was going to make some recommendations. If you aren't having to deal with an age-restricted Halloween and you are looking for some films to watch and you want to move away from the usual fare of the moment, which seems to be stuff like The Conjuring Universe or whatever's the latest Paranormal Activity, and you're looking for some classic stuff... I can highly recommend Pumpkinhead, or actually any horror film that's got Lance Henriksen in it.
Not
except
everyone.
For Mind Ripper.
Yeah.
Which is more sci-fi horror than anything else. Watch the original Fly. That's actually quite good. Mm. Actually, watch some David Cronenberg films, watch some John Carpenter films, George Romero films.
When you say original Fly, would that be the Vincent
Not the original one, sorry. The Cronenberg Fly. Were they going to remake The Fly again? I feel like there was conversations about it. I feel like it... I don't know, they keep trying to remake shit all the time.
Well, I mean, that's pretty much what... I mean... If you think about it, if they're not remaking films, then they're doing films of books or of comics or of,
Rarely is anything new IP.
Yeah, and it's kind of sad. You know. But I think it, to be honest, it's kind of more because the film industry leans towards making sure that they've got an inbuilt audience already. So I can kind of understand that, because making a film is a gigantic financial risk.
Do you know what? I know we're trying to alternate with Lord of the Rings films for our date night movie nights at the moment. Mm-hmm. Do you think maybe this week, because we can't watch it when the brothers are over, we could watch Midsommar?
Now that is one I do want to watch.
That's a horror film. It has lots of... Yeah, can we please watch that? Please? All you need to know is it's a horror film.
No pressure, it's just being recorded and I'm listening.
I mean, I suppose if you really want, but yeah, whatever.
Meh. Let's see if that we deal with. I'm not sure if I'm ready to head back to Middle Earth at the moment. Because we're watching the extended versions.
I don't, to be honest, I kind of liked watching the first, you know, Lord of the
Fellowship
Ring.
Of the Ring.
It's like I'm someone who liked the you know the Lord of the Rings extended cuts, but you need a breather, you need space between them because they're big things.
It was actually advantageous having them slowly released out through like the cinema, at least the main cuts, because it's like
which is kind of odd considering nowadays it's like, oh, let's binge watch an entire series of something on Netflix. But for Lord of the Rings, it's like, no, you need a break between the films.
I think a lot of it is the pacing.
Mm-hmm.
Things are formatted into episodes, so, you know, you have, like, you know, bite-sized chunks, and they can be, like, you know, chapters, whereas, you know, the Lord of the Rings, you know, movies are, like, you know, big fuck-up books.
It does make me wonder, though, if you basically re-edited them.
That's a Latin term, by the way.
So that it's like kind of almost like a flashback type kind of scenario, and then you could actually kind of mix it up so that it flows better.
Mm. So, but hey, Frodo, do you remember that time Boromir tried to nick the ring and died?
I've just realised a horror film I wouldn't mind rewatching, but we don't have.
What's that?
The original Lost Boys.
We don't have that.
We don't have the Lost Boys, no. We don't actually... in terms of vampire horror films...
We've got, like,
we've got Farf, which is Lance Henriksen, again. That's an 18.
Mm.
Pumpkinhead's an 18.
Sorry, you're saying about vampires, not...
We don't have many vampire films. Like, we have more zombie films... in terms of subgenre than we do vampire films in our collection. Did I tell the podcast about what happened when I looked into Shudder in the UK?
I don't.
Okay, so Shudder is a streaming service that is available, you know, in both the US, Canada, and the UK, maybe a couple of other territories as well. And it is, well, I thought, oh, because it's been advertised at us like a couple times on YouTube. It's like, oh, you know, horror streaming, you know, original shows and classic films and all that. And I was like, oh, you know, because it's not like we have like the biggest horror film collection ever. We've got like some classics, basically, and a couple of out there ones. Pontypool's a 15, but
Pontypool is good.
But I don't know.
I think that might be a bit too high concept.
It would be. But anyway, I was like, oh, you know, Shudder. Like, it sounds kind of cool. And I listened to an episode of... No, it wasn't Kingcast. It was Inside... Is it Inside of You? The Michael Rosenbaum?
I beg your pardon?
I'm just trying to find the correct title before it's either Inside of You or Inside of Me.
Inside of You, a Hannibal story.
No, Inside of You. No, it's Inside of You, the
hell.
Michael Rosenbaum podcast. And he had Eli Roth as a guest a few months ago. And he was like talking about making horror films and shit, because that's Roth's kind of main gig, his horror from like hostel from hostel to like, you know, like The Green Inferno, and like he's done like a series about horror films and things. So yeah, pretty much his gig. And he's not in like Tarantino films.
Hmm?
He roughs in Inglourious Basterds.
Is he?
Yeah.
As well.
I believe is he the bear chew? I can't remember.
Oh really?
Yeah. Let me double check it a minute. Anyway, so
I have not seen Inglourious Basterds, so I'm I just haven't.
So
I haven't avoided anyway, it. I've just not seen
he
it.
Was yeah, talking about
punching and scalping Nazis is usually right up my street.
Yeah, he's Sergeant Donnie Donowitz.
Oh wow. Okay.
But anyway, he was talking about Shudder. And I was like, because I was like, oh, Halloween's coming. Yeah, it'd be nice to watch some horror films of Halloween. So anyway, I decided to do their free trial, looked at what they had, because you had to, unfortunately, hand over card details, and I cancelled it before even watching anything, because almost everything that they had, we already had on disc. Or it was available on Amazon or Netflix.
Mm.
Except for some of the show stuff that they had, which wasn't much. And the annoying thing was, is that, you know, I talked to some American and Canadian friends who had subscribed in their territories. And okay, so it's only like just under 50 quid a year. But in other territories, namely the US and Canada, where the UK had 250 titles, I counted, in terms of films, US and Canada, you were looking at well over 600. From what my friends were saying. And I was like, and it was for the same sort of price, not really kind of put through much conversion. So I was just like, yeah, no. So I cancelled my subscription. Maybe if you don't have an have any horror films, and you find it hard to find stuff on like Netflix or whatever, maybe it's worth having a peek. But yeah, I'm not 100% convinced, basically, by Shudder. In the UK, at least. I mean, yes, we could try to watch it over a VPN, Trixly, and blah, 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 blah. But
good old Abe internet.
But not particularly keen on trying to do that.
It's a bit like, you know, there's still some big differences with Netflix, but I think they've kind of, you know, pulled the socks up.
Yeah, or at least for
it,
us.
It did used to be that you know, I'd see, you know, Twitter friends or, you know, whatever, saying, "Oh, such and such on Netflix." Oh yeah, and I'd be going, "Oh yeah, I fancy watching that." Search. Oh, it's not found.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the Square and Nintendo, you know, middle finger from the 80s and 90s, just, you know, shining through the screen at me and say, "Oh, it's rude."
Yeah.
We said, no, we hate you.
But anyway, I think that's what everyone's up to for Halloweeniness. So, in terms of generally what people have been up to.
I mean, how many films do you reckon that will get through?
Well, we're meant to be starting at 2 in the afternoon.
Mm. So, I think, what, 3? 3 films? Does that sound reasonable?
That
doable?
I think it might be more like 4.
4 films?
I think we might get to 4. We'll have to report our findings back to the listening public. Mm. I mean, remember, our only 2 previous movie marathon experiences are trying to get through MCU films for one of our birthdays. Where,
hey, what?
Yeah, because we did the whole, like, we tried to, before there was tons of MCU films, we, like, watched
right, okay.
A whole bunch of them for one of our birthdays years ago.
I vaguely remember.
Might be my birthday.
Yeah, I vaguely remember something like. So, I remember Matthew. Okay, apparently I'm not allowed to say names. But a friend of ours, that was kind of sort of like saying about being able to kind of watch everything in chronological order, and like all the films are kind of being edited together, and you can kind of see it that way.
But no, we did like actual marathon where we like had, I think we were skipping certain films though in order to do it, but I can't remember which. I think it was basically like the only the first Avengers film in terms of like it was the first phase one basically.
Yeah.
I think we watched. So we've got experience trying to do that, and the action movie marathon that we did for my birthday last year, which we got through five or more films.
Really, that many?
Yeah, because we started early and stopped late.
True. When you say started early, though, I mean you started like more like 12.
Yeah. But I'm optimistic for at least 4 films.
I remember people kind of coming in during that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we did kind of have a running order, and so people roughly knew when they could at least turn up for the films that they liked the best.
Yeah, I mean, not that you'd have like people kind of go away and then come back and whatnot.
No.
Just like, oh, I can't make it for such and such. Can we?
It feels weird talking about any social occasion where people might be able to easily come and go at the moment.
It is a bit weird, isn't it?
It's a bit.
I think even most introverts kind of miss at least a certain level of socialisation.
There's not been any rock band this year. Anyway. So what have people been up to? I'm going to go Paul.
Me?
First.
Was it narrowed down?
The Paul that sits beside me.
Paul okay. Prime.
Paul Prime.
So, yeah, recently, let's see, one thing that I've been up to, I binge-watched the final season of Me, You, Her.
Yeah.
No, You, Me, Her.
You, Me, Her?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was... Yeah, kind of stuck all of its happy moments, say happy moments, obviously, just like the, you know, the whole happy relationship typey stuff right into the last 5 minutes, pretty much. So, and the rest was mostly kind of drama. I should probably still, like, say, kind of spoilers, but never mind. Let's see. So, what else? I've been experimenting slightly. So, I recently acquired a die cutting machine, and I have been experimenting with cutting out shapes on heat transfer vinyl and kind of seeing what all kind of how best to do it for different like fabrics and whatnot. I think I had like a plaid kind of fabric-y type material, which I've managed to kind of figure out how to kind of stick that on so that it doesn't actually kind of fall off, at least. And also onto kind of a leathery type material, because I'm planning on making a headphones pouch for Emily. And by prettying it up with kind of a bit of vinyl. So yeah, quite practical and whatnot. Coupled with my sewing machine as well. So I've been kind of, feeling a little bit crafty recently.
Crafty.
And I think mostly just kind of rubbish on YouTube, to be honest. Other than that. Just trying to think of anything else. No, I'm pretty sure that you've seen. Oh! One mention. Discovery season 3.
Oh yeah.
First two episodes.
Yeah. I mean, I can't possibly comment.
So, I mean. Is it spoilery for kind of talking about what happened at the end of the last season? So they kind of got transported. They went through singularity.
They
travelled.
On purpose.
Basically, like 800 years in their future. So literally, where no man has gone before. And yeah, they're kind of living in the future of when, I suppose, from their perspective, say we were fighting for the future in season 2 to make sure that life can still kind of exist, you know, that far. And yeah, they make it. There are people. But a cataclysmic event has happened in the meantime. Something called The Burn. And yeah, we've kind of got a couple of details about it, about what The Burn is. Something to do with dilithium no longer working for whatever reason, or breaking down or something, exploding maybe. And the Federation is basically kind of...
it's one guy.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah, so the Federation is almost like a myth at this point.
Well, when you have, you know, for anyone who's not familiar with Star Trek, first of all, how dare you? but yeah, it's basically dilithium is the compound which enables warp drives, and without dilithium, there is no faster than light travel.
Yeah.
So the astronomical distances are truly astronomical.
And like the power vacuum that has kind of been created because of the absence of the Federation. I mean, we've only had the first two episodes so far, so I mean, it could go virtually anywhere, really. But yeah, like the first two episodes, you saw kind of almost like pirates that are kind of pirates. Or pirate crews that are literally kind of running a protection racket,
yeah,
type thing, and also like the Orion slave trade and the Andorians kind of there is like in a kind of really seedy marketplace for all sorts of kind of different kind of things and whatnot. And obviously they've kind of got to the future where they're viewing kind of technology as like whoa, and almost like the equivalent of how we see regular Star Trek technology is like, oh, this is actually really cool. And so you kind of get in that sense of like what would be impossible for them is suddenly possible, like personal transporters, where you don't need like a starship to go beam me up or transport me to this other place. You just have this like device that's just like, yep, and away you go. And
which there have been similar bits, little snippets of tech in say Next Generation era, but they've always been unsafe.
Yeah, I mean, I think to be fair, some of the rules with technology they've kind of previously played fast and loose with in Star Trek in general. So I don't think. The technology shown so far is a million miles from, from where they are, as it were. Mm. But you kind of get a sense that obviously kind of the universe is almost like stagnated because, you no longer have like Starfleet that are kind of venturing across the galaxy and whatnot. In fact, you don't actually kind of see exactly... Because, there's been speculation as to how far the Federation had progressed until that point. Like, had they actually kind of ventured off to explore the Gamma Quadrant and the Beta Quadrant and, they've already got the Beta Quadrant, Delta Quadrant, that's one. How big was, the reach of the Federation before it fell? You kind of get the feeling that looking at Picard, or Star Trek Picard, that basically, the Federation has already kind of contracted slightly. They've, had to deal with this kind of thing with the Romulans and whatnot, and some species have kind of had grievances with that and kind of pulled away. So overall, you kind of got a sense of like almost like the golden age of Starfleet has kind of shrunk a little bit, but at this point, it's kind of completely gone.
I do hope that in Picard Season 2 they do reference the Dominion War.
Yes, yeah.
Because that was given as by one of the showrunners as a reason for the Federation having sort of stepped back and being a bit more hesitant.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why they ended up getting synths for ship production and Utopia Planitia on Mars.
Yeah.
So that kind of, I like the fact that that kind of story has kind of kick-started, and, you know, kind of progressed in a natural continuity.
Yeah.
And I
would like more reference.
Absolutely. I see that Emily's getting anxious, so perhaps we should stop talking about Star Trek. And Emily, what have you been up to? Yeah, stick your tongue out at me.
I started watching season 2 of The Alienist today on Netflix, rather than continuing to finish House of the Haunting of a Blind Manor. Which I've managed one episode of. I think I've just realised though what the issue is. I can't get past the freaking kids on that show currently, because regardless of the status of characters in that show, I kind of want to murder the kids. So, but anyway.
Incidentally, I will say that both Hill House and Bly Manor have children as characters, and I didn't want to murder any of them. Well, apart from one, but you're supposed to.
Okay.
And there are reasons.
Mm.
But, yeah.
Anyway, but Alien of Season 2, I've watched 2 episodes of that. It picks off sometime after Season 1, but you've still got the same main characters. It's still cool. I'm not sure where they're going with it, because there was a lot going on with the dynamics of the three main characters in season 1. And they're not quite there at the moment.
I mean, is season 2 of The Alienist, has that been out a while, or is that
no,
very, very new?
No, it only came out like last week.
Okay.
Certainly, if you're looking for something that's crimey and creepy for Halloween, like, yeah, there's some potential there. Certainly season 1. Still not sure about season 2 though. So I've been watching that. You don't want to know how many times I've rewatched Hannibal by this point, but I'm getting to the point where I can definitely do long meta analyses.
I mean, I asked you the other day, and bear in mind that this is like finishing season 3 and then going back to season 1.
It's my comfort show at the moment.
It is your comfort show, and you watch it religiously. Like, you know, well, more than religiously, because it's not even every Sunday. It's like, you know,
just a lot. Dropping me in all of it now, aren't you? Thanks, Paul.
But I think you said about 4 or 5 times through now.
Something like that. But seasons 1 and 2 are my fave. Season 3, I kind of like, but then dislike at the same time. And not because it's the last season, but because it has characters in it that I wish died sooner, basically, for all intents and purposes. But yeah, so watching a bit of Hannibal here and there on the side, still watching The Path on season 2.
Oh, who's in The Path, Emily?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No, I don't know. He's in The Path.
Is it that guy that plays Will Graham?
You mean Mr. Hugh Dancy? It might be. Don't know what you're talking about, though.
I mean, to be fair,
it's also got Aaron Paul in it. Pity's sake. and Aaron Paul's really good in it. But yeah, because I've had to pay for that, I kind of.
You kind of what?
I've had to pay for it recently. Yeah, a little bit. It's like what I did with Longmire. Don't want to.
You don't want to just kind of binge watch it.
Yeah, basically. So much. So yeah, that's the thing. And I'm still reading the fanfic Overcoming, which is so bloody long and quite good. That's a Hannibal AE Regency style fanfic. Alpha Beta Omega, which has taken on a surprising civil rights element at about 60% of the way through the story. I have encountered ABA fanfics in the Supernatural fandom before that decided to take on a civil rights angle. The one big one for that previously has been, I think it's Another Hole in the World, which is, yeah, there's a thing, really long ABA fics, if they're not just sex every chapter, they seem to investigate some element of civil rights.
You saying about ABO kind of reminds me that we need to watch a Lindsay Ellis video.
Oh, yeah, the second video. It's 50 minutes, though. So.
I've watched that.
The new one? The one from last week?
Yes, the one that you linked.
Oh, yeah, we haven't watched that one yet.
I particularly liked the dramatic readings.
She likes doing that.
Also, fanfic deep state.
Was that fanfic deep state?
Yes.
Okay.
I just love the fact that in her first video...
For some reason, that made me think of Hugh Emily.
But I just love the fact that in her first video, she actually managed to get on legal to kind of have an actual legal standpoint for everything that's going on with it.
But I'm more than three quarters of the way through Overcoming now, and I'm hopeful that I might actually finish it sometime this year. Because there's other things I'd like to read, but it's a very... There's so much going on in it, and to go reading something else would lead to much confusion. Much confusion.
A bit like in my D&D campaign where there's, like, lots and lots going on.
Yes.
But that's a good thing, right?
Yes.
There was a question mark there. I heard it. Yes.
No, I mean, I like my D&D campaign so far, and I think most other people like it. And I've been trying to kind of cater to people, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it's good. I'm not saying that it's, you know.
I've also been slowly doing NaNoWriMo prep, which I really need to actually wrap this week because NaNoWriMo starts on Sunday. yeah, I'm going to try and write a novel in a month.
I mean, what kind of prep is
well,
is
it's
exactly?
Stuff like outlining the story, making sure you have a vague idea of the characters and setting that you're doing. Like putting basically planning together so that you don't have to try and think of shit on the top of your head whilst you write when you're trying to achieve something like a word goal that's something like is just over 1600 words a day in order to meet the 50,000 word minimum for it to really qualify as National Novel Writing Month. So.
And this is an original.
Oh, that's an original story.
Yeah. Are you kind of hoping that something will go with that? Or, as in, you know, will it be published? Or
I'm considering various avenues to enable the general public to consume it at some point in the future, yes.
That sounds like a cryptic way of saying, yeah, I hope that it'll get published.
I'm thinking I'm looking at my options, though. I'm not necessarily going to hold out my heart on traditional publishing. This year's really bad for submitting manuscripts because of COVID. Basically, there was a glut of stuff that was held back because of the pandemic. And it all got kind of like released. There was some time over... there was one day or one week in either, I think it was August or September, where about 800 odd titles were like published.
What, all of a sudden? Jeez.
Mm-hmm. It might have been more than that. And basically, it was all titles that had been held back on account of the fact that obviously you didn't have any bookshops like physically open. And publishers are like held back, and then they basically just flooded the market. And it's had a knock-on effect for manuscript uptake, basically.
Yeah.
Certainly on the publisher's side. I'm unsure what it means for those who have representation, because obviously another way of getting stuff published is that you have an agent who then obviously then tries to sell your manuscript around. But, yeah.
I'd imagine that wouldn't be good because obviously people only have a finite amount of money, so
I mean, it was more than, it wasn't just like fiction, that included like non-fiction as well. It was across the board. But it was literally like just tons of stuff that had been held back because the usual sort of sales routes and the usual kind of like advertising, like sort of marketing avenues weren't available. I mean, considering that usually when you get above a certain level of profile, authors of books, whether they're fiction or non-fiction, will do kind of like a tour, you know, and they'll do things like book signings for the release. They'll do things like appearances on radio, TV, and various other media. And, you know, they'll give interviews and things. And those kind of traditional methods of marketing a new book have obviously been vastly changed this year, much like with other media as well.
A little bit.
So I'm considering alternative avenues of publication should I manage to write and edit something that is worth people's time.
What would that be, alternate?
I'm not saying right now.
Ah, fair enough. Okay. You're going to hire like planes and stuff to fly in the sky?
No, I'm just going to not consider Amazon currently and try an alternative.
Print hardback copies. And then get a t-shirt cannon.
Yes.
So, are you reading a book at the moment? It's like, no, I'm looking for something. Go.
And it'll be all socially distanced, which is great.
Yeah. I think it's the only ethical way of distributing books.
Yeah. Actually, we might be giving libraries an idea by talking about this. Not that I see anything wrong with that. Maybe they should be allowed to do that.
What, launch books?
Yeah, at people.
Especially, like, politicians and whatnot, that kind of try and close them down.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, the brilliant thing is, you know, you've already got the name Book Launch.
Yeah. It's a good match.
Yeah, ooh, it is.
It must leave a bookmark.
It will. if you fire too close, it's a bookend.
Anyway, Rotroid, what have you been up to?
You'll be amazed to hear I've been doing nerdy stuff with electronics.
Oh my gosh. I know. Aghast.
Yeah, it's. I'm presuming you're sitting down, otherwise you have fallen.
Yeah, I'm sat down, I'm cool. I haven't fainted yet.
Good. Yeah, after figuring out that it was electronic weirdness. I think I mentioned this last podcast when we discussed it. I said it was, you know, electronic readout weirdness, which was holding me back getting arcade stuff working on SCART TVs.
Mm.
Yeah. So I figured that out. And I've tried to get the best picture I could out of my extremely tired arcade monitor, which came with the cabinet when I bought it years back. And it was just, yeah, no, I'm not getting a better picture out of this. The best I could get was a kind of pale pink.
Oh, dear.
Because there was just far too much red, which in TV terms means there was not enough green and blue, and I could not turn those up. So it's like, yeah, okay, that's, you know, that's done for. It's actually sitting next to me right now.
Oh, dear.
There we go. Nice metal noise. That's the arcade monitor. Now, that was mounted in a square wooden frame, so you could take the screen out and rotate it 90 degrees. So, you know, old arcade games, mostly old arcade games, things like Pac-Man, were vertical. So the screen was more or less on its side. So you turn the cabinet off, take the screen out, turn it 90 degrees, put it back in, and, you know, you've got a vertical, you know, screen. Don't do that while it's switched on. Partly because it could be dangerous if you touch anything that's high voltage, although unlikely. But mostly because the actual magnetic field of the Earth does affect old screens like this. So when they switch on, you know, do either of you remember that? Boom, noise mm-hmm. when you that is high voltage electromagnet degaussing the screen. So it's basically, you know, resetting the magnetics of the tube in the orientation it's in. If you turn a TV on in an old tube TV on its side while it's switched on, the colors will go wrong because the, you know, it's no longer aligned with the, you know, electric or the magnetic field of the planet. So, you know, turn the screen off, turn it on its side, put the screen back on, colors are fine again.
Oh, well, that's really interesting, actually. I mean, that's something that kind of would be kind of cool to test.
Well, I did it, and I found out I could say the hard way, but I didn't do it with several thousand volts hard way. I just did it in the, I rotated the screen because I put a game in, and it's vertical. I'll turn the screen around. Oh, those colours are very wrong. Yeah, turn it off, turn it back on, colours are right again. Because when I got the arcade cabinet, I had an interest in the old tech. I didn't know any of the electronics. But okay, now I do. But anyway, yes. So took the old arcade monitor out of the wooden frame. I had the old TV, which I'd bought to put in the cabinet, but more or less just, you know, have it sitting in the cabinet. And I thought, I wonder if I can, you know, strip it back to basically the TV and the board, and then mount it in the wooden frame so I can, you know, it can sit as a proper replacement in the cabinet. It took a lot of fiddling about and, you know, a lot of fiddling with nuts.
Oh, my.
I know. But, yeah, as it turned out, the old TV I had, which, you know, has got a brilliant picture, I think it was like a spare room TV. It turns out the tube is exactly the same size. So now I've got a naked, for want of a better term, television sat in my arcade cabinet.
Fair.
And
what is the difference between like a traditional kind of TV and a traditional arcade monitor?
An arcade monitor is a bare bones built for red, green, blue, and video sync monitor. It's, you know, it's built, you know, for as bare bones, you know, RGB signal as you can get. Close to 5-volt logic, which is, you know, it's higher than SCART. It's not that much higher than, you know, SCART, but, you know, SCART works in a very similar way. So you've basically got 5 wires that make up the picture that go straight to the board. That does all the regulation that, you know, needs to, you know, convert that analog signal into an analog picture. But of course, most people didn't have RGB TVs in the 80s when arcade monitors were, you know, first used. So that's kind of why it's like that. It's like a hardwired, you know, red, green, blue, you know, crystal clear picture, as close as you can get on that tech. It's also got far more controls at the back that I'm looking at now. So you've got things like vertical size, horizontal size, vertical and horizontal position.
Wow, so it's that's kind of sounds almost like more of a PC monitor than a TV.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, a PC monitor, if you've used a PC monitor and you're, you know, used to all the things that you can do with it, that's pretty much what an arcade monitor was, except an arcade monitor was, you know, it's older tech and most of them are, you know, like standard TV resolution. But yeah, that's a good analogy for them. So it's kind of doing that before there was a way of doing it with, you know, consumer TVs. But of course, us being in you know, Europe and of course Japan with the JP21, which looks identical to a SCART plug, but is wired slightly differently. And I don't know the story behind that, but yeah. But to skip ahead to what I've been doing. So I put that TV in and it looks splendid. It looks absolutely splendid. Watch Bly Manor. Okay. And you'll get the reference. And you know, I put it in, and it, you know, yay! I'm playing an arcade game. Screen goes off, and I think that's a bit weird. So, I've still got the what remains of the TV's front panel, which, unfortunately, with it being a 90s cheap TV, it's basically power and channel up and down.
Fair.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, good. I need the remote control. Guess what? I don't have.
Ah. I mean, would it work with, like, a universal remote control?
I've yet to get one, because I've tried a few. I've got a spare Sky remote, you know, which you could program to, you know, control your, you know, that could be a universal remote. Very patchy support. Mm. And I've tried an otherwise rather surprisingly good Poundland universal remote. And I can get so much functionality. I can change the video modes. I can put the volume up and down, which is better than, you know, you can do just from the front panel. Yeah. But yeah, it turned off, and I thought, that's weird. Put it back on just by pressing the, you know, channel up. So that brought it out of standby. Mm. Played a bit more of my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade board. Screen went off again. I thought, okay, this is a thing it's doing. So I timed it, and it was taking 5 minutes. And I think, you know, I was thinking, this sounds like it thinks for some reason it's not getting a signal.
Yeah.
So I did some tests. Like, I've got a Commodore 64 joystick, which is, you know, it's a TV game one, you know, the one they did like 15 years ago. So put batteries in that, plugged it in to the TV using just composite, you know, the yellow, yellow and white cable that you would get with those. And I left that running, and it didn't turn off after 5 minutes. And I thought, okay, this is getting weirder. But at least I know it's not the TV, you know, switching off under all, you know, conditions.
Yeah.
So I plugged in my original Xbox, which I've got an RGB cable for, because I thought, well, I need to test if it's RGB, which is, you know, the issue.
Yeah.
Because if it is, that's a rather big issue with technology where I'm only wanting to use RGB with it 90% of the time.
Yeah.
And it didn't turn off. And I thought, okay, so it works with the Xbox. But with it being a 90s or sort of, you know, like turn of the 2000s, TV. The most I've been able to find about this particular TV, it's a Pacific STT 2021. You can tell that the model number is burnt into my mind right now. because I couldn't find any information on it. The closest, you know, the best information I could find was that Asda sold them. And that was pretty much it. Not who the original manufacturer was. There's no manufacturer's mark on the board, because trust me, I have looked. There's no, you know, specs out there for it. There's no manual. There's definitely no service manual or anything like that I couldn't find. So, I was getting rather annoyed with all this. But it does mean that I, just to take the piss, because I was, you know, really, really frustrated with all this. This was before I could get, you know, an Xbox connected, so I didn't know if RGB worked full stop. So, you know, that was the major thing for me. But what I ended up doing, because I couldn't find the power supply for my Mega Drive, because I thought, well, there's another machine that I've got an RGB cable for, you know, that I can test it with. I made a USB power cable for my Mega Drive.
You made one?
Yes. Very, very sort of, you know, bits I just had on hand. I had a USB to barrel jack cable, which I'd bought like, you know, 10 of, because I wanted to experiment with them. And if you just connect that to a Mega Drive, it's not enough voltage. It will not switch on. obviously, because that would be far too easy, wouldn't it? So I have some book voltage boards, and they're just tiny little boards with a little screw that you can alter, which will boost the voltage up, but lower the amps that it's, you know, supplying.
Mm.
Because if, you know, the higher the voltage, the lower the amps. It's just, you know, that's the two ways that, you know, power is, you know, defined on voltage. Yeah. And it's kind of like, I've explained it before, it's like you could have, voltage is the width of the river, and the ampage is the speed of the river.
Mm.
So you could have a very wide river, but extremely shallow, and that would be, you know, high voltage, low amps, and, you know, it's just the balancing act. So I'd played about with a universal power supply that I bought from Maplin's before that imploded. Well done there. Everyone's going to buy 300 quid remote control helicopters from Maplin's. Yes, that's a brilliant idea. It won't backfire. So I knew that the Mega Drive is rated for about like 10 volts. You know, all the power supplies that, you know, you could find online said, you know, 12 volts DC. So, you know, direct current. But I knew that by using my bench supply that you could give it about 7.5 volts. And since I've been inside the Mega Drive, I knew that what happened was that they used, you know, cheaper power supplies with a higher voltage and a lower amperage. And then when the power went inside, they had voltage regulators which would lower the voltage to 5 volts so it could get more amperage from that supply. So I already knew the Mega Drive ran on, you know, 5 volts, and so long as it had enough enough amps, you know, coming in, it was happy. So I tweaked this little board so it would supply 8 volts, and then that way, you know, it's still got, you know, enough amperage, you know, behind it. Plugged it into the Mega Drive, works.
Nice.
So, you know, that was a hurrah moment, because, you know, thank God, you know, I'm not suddenly, because I don't know if you've experienced this, no matter how much you know about, you know, a topic or, you know, a method of crafting or, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, whether it's writing or art or anything like that, if you have a bad run of it, you start to doubt.
Fair.
You know, you could think, I'm a moron, you know, I'm not getting this right. What the hell, you know, why am I bothering with all this? But that was the kind of boost I needed. And as a complete side effect, I didn't plan it at all. In fact, what happened was I completed that cable. I brought it in, tested the Mega Drive on the TV. It worked, thank God. Hurrah. And then went back to the shed because I was wanting to do something else. And I imported a Super Famicom. You know, months back, just so I could play, you know, stuff in, you know, 60 hertz and, you know, all that, you know, kind of thing.
Fair.
And I looked up the specs of the, you know, Super Famicom. You know, for anyone who is not aware, the Super Famicom was the Super Nintendo in Japan.
Yeah.
The Famicom being the original name for, you know, the family computer, and then the Super Family computer. So, exactly, you know, Nintendo and Super Nintendo. And I looked it up, and lo and behold, it turns out that the Super Famicom, but not the UK Super Nintendo, was exactly the same power supply spec as the Mega Drive.
Huh.
So this was over the weekend where it was absolutely pissing it down. So I left the shed again, went back upstairs, got the power supply cable, took it back to, you know, the shed, and then, you know, plugged it into the Super Famicom, and that burst into life as well. So now I can run a, you know, my Mega Drives and my Super Famicom from USB power supplies.
Nice.
And that was kind of just, that was just because I wanted to run things in RGB to test this, you know, the TV that I've got in my arcade cabinet now. And yeah, it's, you know, for anyone who's curious, the Super Famicom can consume about 1 amp over USB, and the Mega Drive this is the Mega Drive one, consumes about 2 amps. So as it turns out, the Sega Mega Drive is about twice as power hungry as the Super Famicom. But as a consequence of that, I've been playing F-Zero and R-Type 3 on my arcade cabinet.
Okay.
Just because my Super Nintendo is in there and it works in RGB on that TV, and it looks rather spiffing on the, you know, the arcade monitor as it now is. That's how it's wired. Oh, and also another important thing, a major reason for me needing RGB to work with that TV was that I already knew from testing it that it did not like PAL at 60 hertz. I had tested it with my Raspberry Pi when I first got it. And if I gave it a 60 hertz signal, even if it was, you know, in PAL, which, you know, a UK TV, you know, should have no problem with, it displayed a black and white image.
Wow, that's pretty weird.
Yeah, so I knew for a start that I needed RGB, and if I was getting color on it, then RGB was working. Now, you know, I've accidentally solved 2 problems for myself, but I still don't quite know why the arcade boards I've tried on this TV will switch off after 5 minutes. So I've got to, you know, drag some stuff back to the shed where I've got my oscilloscope and the multimeters and everything like that, and compare the signals. But yeah, I was at a bit of a low point before I managed to get RGB that wasn't an arcade board. Because so long as I know it's working, then what I've been doing isn't in vain, because I really didn't feel like having to glue a TV back together.
Yeah.
That would have been a real low point for me. But I've got more stuff to play in the arcade cabinet once I wire controls up, which is, that's going to be fun.
We may have to call it there, because Emily is literally about to snore, I think.
Yeah, I was desperately trying to cram all that in. I have not mentioned about 5 other things. Just to, you know, yeah.
Fair.
That's what I was doing. But that's a good example of a hobby where even if you think you know what you're doing, you can hit a real low because you think you've fucked it up.
Mm.
And then you can find that, no, there's something else going on. And because I've had to change the signal from the jammer arcade boards going into, you know, an RGB SCART plug, I know it's something that, it's probably something I'm doing which isn't quite in spec, and it's not quite liking it. But at least I know that other stuff works, which means I can fix it.
Yeah, learning.
Yeah, exactly. And you it's the nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Okay, so yeah, I think that's all we've got time for today.
So it's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter's at Paul Blewett.
It's a good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EMKingMA. You can find Nerdassemble on Twitter at NerdsPodcast. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and a couple other places. And we're also on Facebook as Nerdassemble Podcast. Oh, and we're on Instagram as at NerdsPodcast. Not that we update there very often. But, yeah. That's it. So good night.
Good night.
Good night. Everything must run from USB. Everything.
I think this proves that Emily can sign off in her sleep.
Emily needs to charge from USB.
That's not how you sound when snoring. You do realise that, don't you?
She doesn't snore. There you go.
Oh, she does, believe me. She does. In my face. In my face.
There may be trouble ahead.